Hey, it's Dave. Welcome back to the Business Systems Summit. I'm your host, and in this session, we're going to be chatting with Barry Magliditti. Now, he's the founder of a company called Game Changers, and I've had the good fortune to be able to present at one of his events here in Melbourne. And I'm also taking currently one of his coaching groups through the Systemology process. Now, what I love about Barry is when we got introduced, it was immediately obvious that he's a systems guy, and he very much grows businesses in the same way that I do. His structures, methods, his approach, it just fits Systemology and System Hub like a glove. And it shines through that he's more than just a theorist. It's very much, he's a practitioner. His first business was a kitchen and renovations company that he started off in his garage, grew it to a, you know, getting into his own factory, having a staff of 15, multi-million dollar turnover. So he knows what it's like working on the coal face of business, having seen the highs, the lows, and everything in between. As we know, you know, that's what happens in business. This has given him, you know, the chats that I've had with him, it really shines through that he's got a very well-rounded skill set of sales, marketing, cash flow, recruitment, KPIs, just a very deep understanding of business in general. And in recent years, he's taken all of that experience, started up this company called Game Changers, where he helps other business owners build more profitable, higher performing, solid, predictable businesses. So it's definitely with great pleasure that I get to welcome Barry to the summit.
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you for making the time. And I know we've got a lot to cover. You're going to take us through your process for implementing new systems. And I love that idea of having a process for implementing systems. We talk about our system for creating systems. It only makes sense that you then have a system for how you implement them. So I'll let you take us through. Usually just to start, though, if you can just talk to us maybe some of the challenges that you see this particular system that it aims to solve, and then we can kind of go through step by step.
Yeah, great. So obviously many years ago, as you mentioned, I had the kitchen bathroom renovation business. And what you didn't mention is that I grew it to a multi-million dollar turnover, but I had a multi-million dollar job because back then I didn't understand the importance of systems or processes. And I remember looking into it and I read a lot of these books, but they just never really told me how to do them. And I remember that someone told me that the main system that I needed to create was a system for writing systems. And so that was the very first one that I wrote was, as you mentioned, something you guys do as well, which was, you know, a way that when we bring on new staff member, rather than us, you know, going and pre-creating the systems for them, we would show them how to systemize or how to create a system. We would train them up and then we'd ask them and expect that they would actually create the system for us. And that's how our company now has, I think, over 260 different systems or how-to manuals. And I think I've created less than 20 of them, which is awesome. Yet 6 months ago, maybe even 9 months ago, I started to notice an issue. We got to a stage where we had quite a large team and we had a lot of systems. And I noticed that some things weren't happening. And I would say, well, hey, just go and create a system for that. And then upon looking, I realized that we already had a system created for it. And so this problem started to appear where we were duplicating systems because they weren't being executed. And I said to the team that what we actually needed was some form of a process that would first help us to identify whether or not we had an existing system in our library, number one, and number two, that would allow once we implement a system, it to become a reoccurring project or task. You know, we run quite a large team in the Philippines. They run pretty much the whole entire back end and some of the front end of our business. And it means that our whole team can operate simultaneously from around the world without being in the same office, just through the process I'm going to take you guys through today.
Yeah, perfect. And you see that quite often when someone gets bitten by the systems bug, they read the E-Myth or Built to Sell, Work the System, and they go, oh yes, I want to systemize. And then they just start systemizing everything. And the other issue that happens as well is oftentimes then they create systems sometimes that have low impact, like that they're not actually creating a system that will significantly affect their bottom line. So I think this idea of, okay, how do we evaluate that? How do we make sure that they get used? I'm very curious to know, where do you get started in the process?
Yeah, so to start the process, the first question you need to ask is decision-making is, does the system currently exist, right? So here we'd have it linked back into what we call like our systems registry. And so if they were to click on the link inside the box, it would open up a Google Doc, a Google spreadsheet, and you can go through per pillar of the business, whether it's marketing, sales, fulfillment, and you could see every single system or how-to we have related to that pillar of business. So the first question is really, does the system exist, yes or no?
Yes. Yep. That makes perfect sense. And what initiates this, like for someone to go, okay, do we need to check whether or not something has happened? Is this Barry kicks it off by saying, hey, here's a problem, go make a system for that? Or is that the individual team member? What kind of usually is that first trigger?
Well, any time that there's been given a start, like some sort of a task to complete. So typically, even projects, like we're finding a lot of the projects that we implement into the business are growth projects, whether they're around sales and marketing, client retention, whether they're around culture. But those projects often become reoccurring tasks once they've been built out. Like if you have a project to go and build a new funnel, there's a project to create that from scratch, but then it becomes into all optimization, like creating new creatives for it, new copy, new images, optimizing the ads. So it becomes a reoccurring task. So this starts off whenever there's anything to be done within the business, whether myself or my general manager or some other team member asks a team member to do something.
Yeah, perfect. And then that first step is, okay, do we have anything in place? All right, then I'm assuming what happens if there's yes and what happens if there's no, because I can already see there's a bit of a decision tree going on here.
Yeah. So if it's yes, the next question is, does it work accurately and achieve the objective? So it's for that team member to read through. Does this work accurately and does it achieve the objective we're looking to? If the answer is yes, end the process, like follow the systems being created. If it's no, at that question, it comes into later down the line, which you'll be able to see from the process you download from here. If we go back to that first point, does a system currently exist? And the answer is no. The next step is this task to be done again? Right now, this is a decision-making matrix, but it's a bit of a tricky one. And that is because if the answer is no, the next question is, are you sure? And if they say yes, it keeps on looping around because I've never found anything in a business that doesn't need to be done twice.
Yes.
And so often as a team member, it's like, oh, does it need to be done again? No. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't need to be done again. And then a month later or 6 weeks later or 6 months later, you're asked to do the same thing again. And so the time it takes you to go and document it when you're doing that thing for the first time can save you a lot of time later down the track having to redo it again.
Yeah, and it's that classic thing of always making sure you've got good redundancy in place, because maybe you're not, or you don't think you're going to redo it, but what's to say that you don't get sick or get time off or whatever, and then someone's got to do it. So yeah, definitely that makes perfect sense. All right, so at this point, yeah, we've decided it is a recurring task and we don't really have a system in place. What happens next?
Well, this is where it links into your system for writing system document that you mentioned. So the next thing is create a system using the system for writing systems. So I'm sure you'll probably link that into this training as well, but that's simply to go through the how-to and to create a system for whatever that task is or whatever that project is to be completed.
Yeah. Now, because you've probably done this a little bit, and I know it might be slightly outside of the scope, are there any little hiccups or challenges or suggestions that you might have or insights for creating systems that you've found that have worked particularly well for you guys and your team?
Yeah. So we have the system for creating systems document. And the very first step is to watch your video. Like we find that, you know, being in the behavioral and the performance psychology space, people have different learning modalities. You know, some people are auditory, some people are visual, some people are kinesthetic. And so whenever they're creating a system, we're wanting to both document it from a written steps perspective, but we're also always wanting to add into that either a video. So if it's something that they're doing on the computer, maybe using useloom.com to kind of, you know, talk them through this is how it's done. Yeah. And then maybe it's also taking some screenshots of what done looks like. So the original system for writing systems document was just, here's a purpose, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's when we're doing it, and here's who does it, and here's the steps. But we since kind of revised that about 12 months ago to have, you know, what does done look like? Yeah. So people can actually benchmark it against, is this graphic or is this video or is this thing that I've created, does it look and feel like what it's supposed to? And so it's, you know, if you're making, I went to a cafe the other day. I go there a couple of times a week and order a charcoal smoothie bowl. And I rocked up, and the moment it was delivered to my table, I immediately noticed that it wasn't the same as it always is. Now, I order this thing two or three times a week. It was paler in color, and it looked like it had coconut mixed through it, which it doesn't usually have. And so it looks different, and then I tasted it, and it tasted different. It was very watery. And I ended up, they could tell I wasn't too happy with it, so they took it back and made it again, and it came out the same. And they ended up giving me a refund because they said, well, you would know what it's like. Now, that's a perfect example of if they had a document in place, they said, oh, look, we had a new chef hand on last night who pre-made the batches. Maybe they did something differently. Now, if they had a system in place with photos of what it looks like, it'd be very obvious that one was black as black and one was grey, right? And there's a difference in that. And so I think that, us adding in the videos and adding in what has done look like has really allowed that process to work better. And the last step is what to do if there's a problem. Like, who should they contact in the team if they've got questions around that system or a problem? Like, you don't want them coming back to you as a business owner. You want them to come back to their direct report or somebody else who's got experience in using the system as well.
Yeah, perfect. One other thing I've seen that you guys do quite well, I'm interested to know when you introduce it, are your flow charts as well. Is that something that you do when you're first designing the system? Is it as the system matures? Is it, at what point do you introduce those?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we had a lot of these systems and we found it a little bit complicated to understand what to use when. I'm an avid studier. I started reading and going through scaling up. We hired one of 100 coaches, I think, in the world who's trained in Vern Harnish's scaling up methodology. And upon going through and having conversations with him, he spoke to me and said that any business, regardless of whether you're doing $100,000 a year or $1 billion a year, have between 4 to 9 core processes. Now, what they call as a process is a flow chart, is what you just mentioned, where you can see the boxes and the decision-making and everything else. And they call systems being like the how-to documents, the steps.
Yeah.
And this got me curious, and being quite visual and, you know, liking maybe a bit autistic, I don't know, but liking to see things connected. Mm. I started to map out what does our sales process look like, because I had sales templates, I had scripts, I had, you know, different videos of how to take payments, how to do this stuff, but there was nothing that kind of held them all together in a box. And so the first flowchart we designed was a sales flowchart. And then what we went through and did is we used Lucidchart. So I think you used Draw.io as well. Each box that had a step, we hyperlinked back to the supporting document. So if it's a sales call, it went back to the sales script. If it was an appointment setting call, it went back to the appointment setting. It was taking the deposit, it was going back to a video that showed how to take a deposit. And what that meant is that when we brought on board new salespeople, rather than saying, well, hey, here's a bunch of systems, go and learn them, we could actually give them the one flow chart and say, hey, here's the sales process, learn it. And they go through in sequential order and click on each of the boxes and bring up the supporting document wherever they're at in that flowchart. And it gave them the insights, the steps, the how-tos of specifically what that looked like. And from that, it worked so easily and so efficiently. We could onboard salespeople like far faster than ever before. We then decided to build it out for the business. And so we went backwards into marketing. We built out a flowchart for marketing. Then we went forwards into client delivery, you know, onboarding clients, retaining clients, offboarding clients. Then we went into payment processing as well. Then we went into recruitment. So how do we, you know, hire, train, retain, and offboard staff? And then lastly, the last one we implemented was actually how do we strategically plan in the business, and how do we implement projects, you know, decide on projects to work on, and implement projects within the team. And so having those flowcharts now, whenever we create it, we create a system. It's like, okay, does this fit inside one of our flowcharts? And we just go and update it.
Yeah, I love that, because that, I mean, that fits with my model of the world and understanding of business, just that business is a collection of different systems, and, you know, different departments are different systems. And I use the word systems, and it's tough because, yeah, there are so many different definitions. People talk about how-tos and processes and procedures and checklists, and I've almost come to this idea of just, yeah, a global term system, and it depends on just how deep or how shallow you are. Like at the top level, you've got these systems that you're talking about, but then down at the how-to level can also be a system as well. I love from a creative person, I think when they see that and they see business structured like that, I've seen it so many times for business owners, they just go, ah, this makes sense. And it makes it much easier to spot where the holes are as well. Because you look at a map and you think about, well, what does your marketing system look like? Well, no wonder it's rubbish. It's got all of these holes just here, and then it becomes much easier to plug them. So yeah, we might even include a screenshot or two of you know, a high level map, just so someone gets an idea. That's ultimately what you want to be building out in all of the different departments. So if we go back then, and at this point, then we've gone through the system for creating systems, and you create that document, that how-to, what happens next in the process?
Yes, the next step is implement a user system. So before we actually want to store the system into the library or into the registry, we want to actually implement it, use it a few times, give it a bit of a run to perfect it. Because often what happens is when people implement things, I know in the early day when I was creating systems, because a lot of what I was doing was unconscious competence, you know, like when I was at the stage of creating systems to bring on staff, I'd done that particular thing so many times that I would miss steps in my brain, right, unconsciously. So when I went to create it and write it down, I'd pass it on to someone. I had gaps everywhere. Now, if your staff are doing the same thing, there's a possibility there's gaps there. So you want to implement the system and run it, I think, like 4 to 5 times, start to finish, and just revise it and update it. And you know that you're ready to proceed to the next level once there's no additions to be made. So once you're able to run that through start to finish and you achieve the objective, remember that initial step, accurate and achieves the objectives. Once it's there, then you can move on to the next step. So the first step is implement a user system. The next one is, does it need any adjustments? And essentially it stays in that loop. It stays in that loop until that staff member, or that team member notices there's no more adjustments to be made, and then it can proceed to the next level.
Yeah. And when you're in that looping process right there, is that usually done by the person who's written the system? Is it more than one? Yeah, okay. So they'll basically do the task again. Have I got everything?
Yeah. So anyone, like say you've got two people that both do social media marketing, and one person creates a system, they will get both people in that department to implement it, right? But typically, most of the time, it's just the person that creates it is the person that's using it, and it stays in that loop until there's no further adjustments to be made.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So then we move on to, so does it need any adjustments? When we get to no, it moves on to send a department head for approval. So like if you're just a one or two man band, you may miss this step. But if you're like us where you have, you know, marketing heads, or sorry, management heads, you would send it to the head, so whoever is your reporting line, for them to kind of oversee and to gain the approval. And then you go on to the next step with adjust the system. So then it's from that management level to go, okay, has there been a step that this staff member has missed out, or is it good to continue onwards? And if it's missed a step, it goes back to implement a user system again. It just loops back into that same spot again.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I'm imagining as well, part of the looping through that final step when you're creating a system, you said this is what the done picture looks like. So you just keep on going round until you can successfully have that completed, no matter who's following that process. Correct. And then the good thing about the department head is they have good visibility on what the whole team in that department is doing. So sometimes they can take into account things that maybe the individual hasn't, about how it's prepared before it's handed off or what the next step is. Yeah. That's the good thing about the department heads.
Yeah. And sometimes too, like the department head might be 2 or 3 steps removed from that task. So if they can look in the system and follow it through and achieve the objective, you know that it's fit for a new team member or somebody else on your team. And, you know, we're lucky enough, if you look at our virtual team, they can pretty much do the jobs of each other because of the way that we structure our system and processes. Besides maybe the appointment setting, which we've done a lot of extensive training to get our team to where they're at, they can jump on and do someone else's role like that. And so when you couple your systems to like a project management software, I know you use Asana, we use Asana as well. It means that if a staff member is sick one day, they can assign login access to Asana to another staff member. They can just simply go through the list and tick off everything that needs to be done, because under each item that needs to be done, LinkedIn is the how-to or the system for the day. And so you can have a staff member jump in who's never put a post on social media before or ran a Facebook ad and follow the step and know that they'll achieve the same outcome as what the staff member before. It might take them a bit longer because they're having to learn as they go, but they can follow the steps and achieve a successful outcome.
Yeah, and I think that really is the magic when I think you combine those three elements. When you get great staff, then you combine that with good how-to documentation and the project management, which handles the who does what by when. Once all of that just sort of connects, you put yourself in a very strong position. And again, I mentioned it right at the start, just the way that you approach business is really similar to us. So it's, that's why I love getting your work out in front of our audience as well, because it'll make sense for them as they hear this. So what's that next step then? We kind of talked about how that structure works, and it feels like there's that loop. Do you have any other steps?
Yeah, so if the department head doesn't have any adjustments to make, then it's to be named correctly, stored in the file system, and update in the system's library. So essentially what happens is that a staff member might name it, how to ask for referral. But what we'll do is we'll go and put a number on it. To start with, it might be PR003, depending on where it sits. So we've just simplified everything. So we have departments. So we have TGC Heart, which is basically like if you look at a file structure on Google Drive, when you open up the game changers, the first thing you see is TGC Heart, which relates to any strategic planning, anything to do with the board meetings, anything to do with vision, mission, and values and culture. Then you have marketing, sales, fulfillment, which is the way you deliver, the way we deliver our product and service. People and performance, which is our culture, finances, and that's it. So everything is stored under one of those pillars. And so it gets named related to which pillar it falls underneath and which system or how to it is in the line of systems that we've got. So that it's the manager or the department head's role to name it correctly, store it in the file structure, so wherever it needs to be stored within Systems Hub. We back it up on Google Drive as well, and then store it in the document registry. So I mentioned at the start of the session that we have a Google Sheet that's basically all the documents listed in there, and they're all hyperlinked back. So if we ever have any issues with one of our software platforms crashing, we can just jump back into that Google Sheet and obviously get direct access to those systems.
Yeah, that makes good sense. And I know once people sort of start going and the team gets familiar with where systems are getting stored, particularly in System Hub, people grab, if they run a search for something, you can grab a tag or whatever that query is and you put it in as a tag. So I see that you mentioned about your particular little naming convention there. We see that with particularly people who are going for things like ISO certification. They'll have the ISO number, they'll put it in as a tag. They don't necessarily want it in the title because, you know, it's a clunky number and kind of hurts usability, but you still want to be able to search by it and find what it is that you're looking for. But I think just that software stack that you were talking about, if the point at which you assign a task to an individual, you also then have a link through to the task, that's the best way to do it. Because the other thing that happens when you do this is you create this level of accountability, because when they're checking it off, they're effectively saying, I had followed the system as you have outlined it here because I'm checking it off. And it makes then the management side of things infinitely easier, because I think that's one of the biggest problems I hear with people when they implement systems is, yeah, even if I had systems in place, my team aren't going to follow them anyway. Yeah. And that's the missing piece for a lot of people.
And it's twofold. Like, one is to have a systems thinking culture, right? We sign a lot of clients on board. One the other day is doing $7 million a year. The whole business revolves around him, and he's like, oh, my team won't follow them. And, you know, the team's going to be resistant when you go to put systems in place because they're already up against the wall trying to get everything done, and you're asking them to do more, or perceivably asking them to do more. But once they start to implement some basic systems and notice that those systems provide them with their time and ultimately their life back, they're a lot more receptive to then going whole hog. And so if you are looking to implement systems for the first time within your team, just start with one or two that will make the biggest impact on their lives and yours before trying to systemize your whole entire business. Get some runs on the board and get buy-in from them to then go through. And as you mentioned, Asana works very well from a management accountability, which is the next step in this, is that after it's named, it then gets put into Asana under the department as a recurring task. So Asana is set up the same way with those core department heads we spoke about as core projects. Under each one of those, the first project is always called fulfillment reoccurring or marketing reoccurring. And then when you click on reoccurring, you can see what are our daily, what are our weekly, what are our fortnightly, what are our monthly, quarterly, and annual reoccurring tasks. And that system will be under there, like, you know, how to respond to a request to a Facebook group, free Facebook group, how to upload a podcast. They're all in there. And under each of those tasks is linked back into, here's a description of what this task is. Here's a link to the process, the full how-to document. And then underneath here are the key 2, 3, 4, 10 steps that you have to do, which are the steps from your checklist in your system in the first place. And so if you've got a staff member who is doing that job all day, every day, they don't need to go in and read the system. They can just go, yep, I've done that, tick it off. But remember, if we're bringing someone else in new, or if they're sick and someone else is coming and taking over their role for the day, they will want to have a link to click on to read the full process and the full system before completing the task, which is why we want to link it back into the reoccurring tasks in Asana.
When you see, because you have developed this technology that you use inside your business, and then you deploy this thinking in a lot of the clients that you're working with, what sort of changes are you seeing when you're deploying this? Because it's this is huge and solves just by the way that it's set up. It automatically solves a lot of problems for business owners just by having the stack set up this way.
Yeah. So Dave, we our kind of tagline is that we help people to triple their profits and double their time off. And you know, if any of the guys watching this were to check us out on YouTube or on our website, you'll notice that there's a common theme amongst the hundreds of testimonies we've got with our clients saying, hey, we've tripled our revenue and profits and we've doubled our time off. And a big component of that is around the way that we help them to set up systems, because typically, as you know, the visionary of an organization or the A-type entrepreneur is resistant to this sort of structure. Yet it's this sort of structure that will set you free and allow you to do more of what you want. And you don't need to be the one to implement it. Like, that's the biggest misconception, is that you, as a business owner, doesn't need to be the person to create the system, the processes, or even necessarily use them. Right, but you need to promote them, and you need to set up the structure for your team to use them and to perform by them. And so that is a big part of, I guess, what we do, is we help to implement that. And the second part is really working with the business owner around their mindset and shifting that. Because if they're reluctant to implement systems or processes, if they're reluctant to put any structure in place, they're ultimately not going to unlock the potential within their business or within themselves, because you know, it's all coming out of their head, the shiny thing syndrome. They're trying to do a million things at once. There's nothing in place to make sure that consistency is done. As a business owner, you know, myself, I've gone through a huge journey, and the more consistent I can become now with how I'm investing my time, the more consistent the business is. And what I mean is, there's still a lot of adversity. I still get a lot of time to create, but we have structures around our meeting rhythm. We have structures around how we do our project planning, around how we implement this sort of stuff. And my team in the background doesn't need to be told to go and make a system for something they're doing, because it's expected of them. Right, and we have a culture that we've bred that, and they understand the importance of having those things in place.
Yeah, I think the big thing you hit on there is oftentimes a lot of founders, business owners, they are the creative people. They see the big problem in the world. They want to go out and solve that problem. They're quick movers. They can figure out any challenge that falls in their lap. Oftentimes they're not made up. They're not wired to appreciate systems and processes. And for some reason, they then think, oh, everybody else is like me.
Yeah.
And they project this idea that other people won't like systems and processes. But I find team members love systems and processes because it helps them to understand how they can excel in their job. It sets the expectation. It tells them what is required for them to dominate and, you know, really perform and outperform in their position. So it's almost like that misconception. They're carrying their own baggage. And that's, yeah, I really get this idea that you work also on the mindset, because that's really the biggest thing that holds the business owner back.
Yeah. Mate, I think, you know, I think it's Michael Gerber that talks about the transition between, you know, being the technician through to being the manager, through to being the leader, and through to being the entrepreneur. And I think, you know, one of the hardest transitions that people can make is around the manager to leader. Right. And then leader to entrepreneur, which is the entrepreneur is where the business is, you know, it's like the game changer. The business will operate without me. I could walk away for a month or 3 months. We would still bring on board new clients. We still generate more leads. We still deliver amazing results to our clients. The team will still be highly functional because we have a business set up that supports that. But the hardest thing that I see working with the clients that we do, the shift they have to make, is actually around themselves and their identity. Because if they've been this business owner for so long and they've kept the business running, there's this thing that starts to happen when they set the systems and processes up and they're no longer needed, right? There's this thing that happens where they almost create sabotage in the business to find ways of them feeling worthy or find ways of them feeling like they're needed and required in the business. And so there's a significant shift. I think the system, the processes are the easy part, to be honest. Like, once you start this journey, they're not that hard to put in place, especially if you're using, you know, systems, hub and Draw.io and softwares like that. The hardest part is the shift the business owner has to make within themselves to be able to operate a business that doesn't require them anymore. Doesn't mean they don't have to work, but to have a business set up that doesn't require them. And I think you're the same as me, Dave, is that when I get too involved in my business now, my staff tell me to go away because I break things. And I think you're very similar with your integrated economy as well, is that, you know, they want me to create, they want me to be out there in the visionary side of things, not in the back end operational side of things because I break stuff. You know, yeah. It's a very different skill set.
And that's where you will bring the most value. It's seeing those opportunities. It's quite sad when you see a business owner grow a business to a certain size, get stuck in the operations, they're on that treadmill, and then the real juice, their unique ability is to see opportunities and you know, go out and create solutions. But because they're just doing the same thing over and over and over, they don't have the space to see that. And they might have the best opportunity in the world knocking on their door, but they just can't take advantage of it because, you know, they're too focused on just getting the work done. So it's, I see this as a way to really free those business owners to do their best work.
Well, there's also a belief though too, Dave, that people won't do it as well as me. And in many ways that's true, in the notion that you'll find it hard as a business owner, entrepreneur, or the founder to find any one person that can do as much as you, as good as you. Right? Because we naturally have to take on board all these different skill sets to get our business up and running. Mm. But you will find someone in sales that's better than you in sales. You will find someone in marketing that's better than you at marketing because that's where they go deep, right? Their core skill set is around that. And you've got to be okay and prepared to step back and allow things to break to be free. You know, one test we get our clients to go through is that once they get to a certain level in our programs, we ask them to take a month off. And it's a month off without their phone or computers to see what breaks. Because often, when you get the business to that stage, it's very hard to see where the gaps are while you're still involved. And it's once you can remove them from you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that things break a little bit, that allows us to understand, well, that's what we need to go and build some more structure in. That's what we need to go and build some more process or some systems around, because there's been a bit of a gap there that we've been filling without even knowing it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So if we come back to that system, I think we might have gone all the way through it. I just want to...
Not quite. So added to Asana under the partner recurring tasks.
Yep.
Set up the reoccurring task with notes, links, and assign it to a team member. So it needs to be like every system needs to be assigned to one person as a single point of accountability. The next step is then to email the team member with an overview of what it is, when to use it and why. Remember that team member's most likely created it. So it's like, hey, your system's been uploaded. Here is an Asana. Here's when it's to be executed. And what we want to do is get a reply from the team member. If we don't get a reply, we want to follow up. But once we have a reply from the team member, that's essentially the end of this process.
Yeah. The other good thing about when you go through this and you build up a systems culture in the company and you let them know, again, everybody is different and you have to understand what's important to them. But if you can create a culture of people systemizing tasks and then delegating it down to lower cost team members, which then frees them up to take higher quality things, which then creates more opportunity for them. That it's a little bit counterintuitive. Sometimes people think when you're creating systems and you're looking at offshoring or, you know, moving tasks overseas, they sit there and they worry about their job. But if you can help team members to understand, that actually makes you more valuable to the company, because now you can do that hardest bit of solving a problem and then solving it perpetually at a lower cost than you doing it yourself. You've just made yourself very valuable.
Yeah, that's right. And I think something that's important for business owners to realize too, Dave, is that systems and processes aren't just a way of documenting tasks. Like, they are everything within the business. Right? Like your marketing. So a client might come to us and they've got challenges with leads. So we help them to develop their niche and their offer and to build out their funnels and landing pages and ads and all that other sort of stuff. But then it gets put into a system where it becomes, as I mentioned before, a reoccurring responsibility of someone. So, you know, a lot of businesses get past that $1 million mark and they haven't got systems in place for marketing and sales, culture development, finances. We had a client that was up $10 million a year, had not a single system or process in his business, right? Running 50 staff. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of businesses can miss that part, but systems really are the framework for, you know, how you're able to bottle and encapsulate both your DNA as a business owner, but the DNA of the company and how you deliver your service and product to the masses. And ultimately, systems will set you free.
Yeah. And if you get that early enough, like I find that sweet spot, once you've got a few team members, the larger you get, once you get to the 50 employees, it gets exponentially harder, the more that it begins to grow. Like, yes, you can tap out. There is a point when, you know, you've effectively, because the biggest resistance is going to come from the existing team members. All new team members, when they come on board, that's all we know. You know, this is the way that we do things here at the Game Changers. When we start, we go through this process, makes it much easier for scale. Whereas when you get to 50, now you have to, you know, start coming up against the resistance of, you know, Jane or Joe, who've been doing this same task the same way for the last 5 years. Why do we need to change things now?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing. Where do you find the sweet spot? Like for you, when you're working with companies, what at what size do you like to work with them to then prepare them to effectively bridge through this gap?
Yeah. Look, we've got two programs and one Opulence. It's set up to work with business owners that are doing at least $250,000-$300,000 a year in revenue, up to a couple of million. In saying that, we've got clients in that program that are doing $7, $8, $9 million a year. And then we have Boardroom, which minimum buy-in is $2 million a year, and it's moving people to multiple eight figures. It doesn't really matter where they come in as long as they come in open. That's probably the biggest thing. Because if they come in open, it's going to allow their team members to become open as well. And it's just a matter of planning how to best implement. Like this guy that I mentioned is doing decent figures, team of 50. It's a matter of going, okay, what one or two systems will create the biggest amount of release for the staff? If we can implement that first and give them a taste of a good feeling around this happening, they're going to be more receptive when we start to roll out the structure and strategy to systemize the whole entire business. But equally too, you know, you could have people that have got two or three staff and they're heavily resistant because it's a small team. Why do we need systems? We can all talk to each other. So I think it's not so much for me the sweet spot day, but I think it's how you introduce it. And if you can introduce it in a way around what it's going to achieve for the business and for the culture and for the growth, and you work with people to have that first experience of some success in doing it, it's a lot easier moving forward. You know, one thing we do is any new staff member that comes on board, one of the first trainings we put them through is a training that we have for our members, which is, you know, build a business that works without you. You know, they go through this training and they learn all the skill sets around creating flow charts and systems and things like that. So that, like you said, on the get-go, it's like, this is how they do business around here, right? From the very get-go.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So in the tail end, I don't know, for this particular system, the process for implementing of systems, are there any final points? Or I know we've kind of gone it through everything and we'll put the flow chart along with the notes as well. Are there any final points you wanted to add?
No, that's really, as I said, for us, the original problem we wanted to solve is that we were creating all these systems and the team was working well, but there were some gaps appearing as more systems were created and as the team started to grow. And so this has really allowed things to go on autopilot. As I said, it's allowed us to grow a phenomenal team in the Philippines that are absolutely phenomenal at executing their job. And we get a lot of comments from our clients around how efficient they are in their role. And it also allows me the peace of mind, Dave, to know that things are getting done, because at any point in time, myself or one of my managers could jump into Asana. They can, you know, the way that we've gone and built out Asana, you know, we've allocated our job cards, you know, instead of having a job description, it's all in Asana under per team member. So you can go and look at what team members working on, what capacity they have. You can see if someone's overloaded, if they're not completing their task. It's a very, very visual way that we've coupled both Systems Hub and the Systemology methodology, both in with Asana and the reoccurring task and project management to scale a team internationally and provide, you know, a phenomenal consistent service to our clients.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd love to do another part two at some point. I know we're looking at speaking at one of your events coming up, and it'd be great to bottle some of this, because the first time we did it, we didn't get to record it. And I'd love to showcase what you guys are doing, because it's a magnificent implementation of this. If people want to find out more about the work that you're doing, we can head them over to thegamechangers.com.au. Is there anywhere else? I know you've got a great podcast that's worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely. If they want to jump on iTunes and check out the Comeback Game podcast, you can also find on the website. We've had over a million downloads in the first 12 months, interviewed some phenomenal entrepreneurs around the world, including none other than yourself, Dave, as well. Also, you can just find me on the social channels. So Barry Magliditti, Magliarditi, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, but mainly thegamechangers.com.au.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time, Barry. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Dave.